Okay. Well, my beginning doesn't want to start. I don't know why. But it says it's a beautiful day and a fine time for healing. So put your feet up and relax, and we're going to get started because my announcer doesn't, my recording doesn't work for some reason. Okay. Oh, I know why. I turned the voice down. All right. Not a problem. We'll do it next time.
So put your feet up, relax, and enjoy today's show. And now, here's Randy.
All right. Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Randy Fine, your show host. When we think about relationships, we tend to focus on our romantic partnerships, says today's special guest, licensed counselor Jessica Baum. But our friendships are just as important, and the quality of those relationships is worthy of our attention. A healthy friendship is built on trust, and you should feel safe. If your friend is the gossip queen or king, be careful. You might enjoy their company, but having a good friend means being able to safely talk to them without the entire town finding out your business. Jessica Baum, LMHC, is the founder of the Relationship Institute of Palm Beach and creator of the self-full method, a therapeutic path to personal wellness and freedom from codependence. Jessica holds an undergraduate degree from Fordham University and a master's degree in mental health counseling from South University. As a certified addiction specialist, her focuses are chemical abuse, codependency, and anxiety. She is also a certified Imago therapist. So, good morning, Jessica. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is my absolute pleasure to have you today on this beautiful Florida morning. Sorry for those who are up north and in the cold, but we're having a great day down here. Okay, so what is it, you know, so many of us have friendships that we hold on to for long periods of time because we feel this loyalty to this person, you know, because they've been in our life for a long time. But what defines a friendship when we think about these things? What should we be thinking?
Well, there's all different types of friendships and different roles that people have in our lives, and I do believe that there are those friendships that are long-lasting. Long-lasting friendships. And those are the type of friends that we might not see for a year or two, and they show up in our life, and we haven't skipped a beat, right? And so there are space for those types of friendships. But there are other friendships that can be taxing and feel like responsibility on us and aren't an equal exchange of give and take. And those are the friendships that you really need to kind of start to analyze and see, are you getting your needs met well? Does this feel like a mutually exclusive friendship that feels safe, like you were saying in the intro? It's really important to evaluate your friendships because they do impact our lives.
Yes, and friendship, I don't know that that everyone understands what a friendship is supposed to be, and we're going to go into, you know, the details of what a friendship is supposed to be, but, you know, as someone who deals with narcissistic abuse all the time, friendships can be very toxic, and we can be friends with narcissists, and when that happens, it is one person giving and the other person taking, but because that person is in our life, we may perceive it as a good friendship. So how do we see a friend what do we see if a friend is using us?
So that's a great example. And particularly with a narcissistic friendship, sometimes that friendship can feel so good because they can show up as a charismatic, fun person, but the truth is that their fun and charismatic selves are showing up in what's in best interest for themselves. So they don't really show up for you when you need them. They show up when they feel like showing up. So it's kind of intermittent or one way. And that person can be exciting, but really at the end of the day, you need someone that you can rely on. And if someone is coming from a more selfish center, you can't really rely on that friend. And that's one of the most important parts of a friendship is that, you know, you can pick up the phone at any time and you know that person is going to somehow show up for you and prioritize you a little. And with narcissistic people, it's really about them. So if they're showing up for you, they can be fun, but it's ultimately about them.
Okay. So really what we're saying is there should be a give and take. So So we should ask ourselves, does it have a give and take? Does this relationship have a give and take, right? Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. And it's not always an even give and take. You know, sometimes you'll go through periods where you're giving a little bit more, and then you'll go through periods where they're showing up a little bit more, but you feel like there's an even exchange of energy, like that person would show up for you and you would show up for them, and there's no resentment that gets built. If you're constantly, for example, if your friend is constantly calling you and dumping their life story on you or dumping all their stress on you, which definitely happens in friendships, but that's all they're doing and they're never kind of stopping and asking you how you're doing or checking in with you, you end up kind of just being that dumping ground for them, and it's really a one-sided relationship.
Okay, that makes sense. And I think a lot of ears are perking up because we often have friendships like this and we may not really stop and realize. It may not feel good, but we still hold on. What about competition between friends?
That's another really great example. And, you know, your friends are supposed to support you. They're never supposed – it's not supposed to ever be a battlefield or a one-upping. And, you know, you bring up the narcissistic personality. They tend to be one-uppers. A friendship is someone that can be happy for you even in a time when they're struggling. I'm going to give an example. So let's say you're getting married and your friend is struggling in their love life. They might be transparent and say, I'm struggling in my love life, but I'm still so happy for you. And they're not going tit for tat or one-upping or living in the Joneses, as some people say, with you and trying to be competitive about what you have and versus what they have. But they're genuinely just happy for your successful moments. And it's really important that you feel supported and that you can share your happy moments with your friends and not feel like, wow, I can't share this because my friend might not be in the same space as I am.
Okay. I tell a story in my book, Close Encounters. I'm going to read this because this is a really good example of what can happen with a friendship. So Darla was my client, and she says that she met Olivia at a gym 2 years ago, and after seeing her there a few times, Olivia came over and talked to her. During the first conversation, they discovered that they had a whole lot in common. And it was almost as if everything Darla said, Olivia said she enjoyed too. So they decided to go for coffee after working out, and they ended up sitting at a table for like 2.5 hours. And so they exchanged numbers and friended each other on Facebook. And Darla was missing a friend that she had a friendship for like 20 years, and the person moved out of the country, and she was missing her, and she told Olivia that she hoped to meet a new friend that she could pal around with, and how amazed she was that she walked into her life. And so, of course, Olivia said she was going through a similar thing, but didn't want to talk about it because it was very raw. And Olivia said she felt this bond before she even approached her and knew that they'd be instant friends. And so they started spending lots of time together and going to the gym and hanging out at each other's apartments. But then, you know, after a few months, it started to feel claustrophobic, and Olivia wanted her to be available whenever she asked. And, you know, and if she texted her, if Darla didn't text right back, she'd get a text that said, I know you're avoiding me, LOL, you know. So it was heavy stuff. And then one day, Darla wasn't feeling well at work, and she came home early. And when she opened up the door to her apartment, Olivia was sleeping on her couch. And so she didn't wake, you know, she didn't wake her. I mean, she woke her up, but of course, Olivia had an excuse, and she said she had come to surprise her by cleaning the apartment. And anyway, it started this whole rift between them. And one night while Darla was relaxing in her living room, there was a knock at the door. And she got, she looked through the peephole, and there was a man standing there. And she asked who was there. And they said it was the police. And then one of them held up a badge and a search warrant. And they told her that they had gotten an anonymous tip that she was running a meth lab out of her apartment. And, you know, anyway, the trust, of course, was broken. And, you know, Olivia went berserk on her. So, you know, they can start, you know, really friendly, happy, you know, Darla gave her a key to her apartment and everything like that because they were just hanging out. So it's very, very, it's almost heartbreaking when you have a friendship that that ends like this.
Yeah, I mean, and I would say that from what I'm hearing you say, that crosses the line of codependency. So we're supposed to be dependent on our friends and we're supposed to rely on them, but at one point, I think it was Darla actually was having expectations for Olivia to meet that Olivia couldn't meet, and Olivia had, it sounds like Olivia had a lot of other things going on too, and so that when we build these relationships with people, having realistic expectations as to how much they're supposed to show up and when they're going to show up and, you know, having dialogue around it and being realistic is really important. And it sounds like one or if both started to rely on each other almost too much to the point where resentment builds, or when the person isn't showing up for them, there's an abandonment wound that is coming up. So it sounds very complicated. And it sounds like that there was almost an enmeshment that happened in the beginning that got them to kind of bond and be very synchronized, but when one stepped away, the other one was triggered and it escalated from that point. And it's really important, just like a romantic relationship, that you go slow with that person, and even though it feels good, you kind of trust takes time. You don't really know someone in the beginning phases. You know their best selves, but you don't know all of them. So you just want to go slowly if you meet someone that you really sync up with.
So what does a best friend look like? Wouldn't there be a certain amount of enmeshment with a best friend?
Yes and no. I don't really use the word best friend anymore, but I would say I use like inner circle, and I have a few people in my inner circle, and it varies. I feel like in adulthood, and just for me, and I actually have like a pretty anxious attachment style, so I need to know that my friends will be there, but I don't need to incorporate them into every aspect of my life. And they, there is a role, like a little bit of a healthy separation. Like I have my relationship, I have my job, and then I have my friendships, and they bleed into some of my roles, but they don't occupy that much space. And, you know, some of my best friends, and I don't know for those who are listening, are people that aren't in my life every day. They are just really quality people when they do show up. And if I need them again, they show up. But they're not calling me on the phone every second of every day or needing that level of need from me. And if they're going through a hard time and they need that, I can do that. But it's different. What you need is different from everyone. And the word best friend, it kind of almost implies that there's just one person. And I just think there might be many people that fill different roles. It almost puts the best friend thing almost puts expectations on that person to begin with.
Right. It does. Sometimes, you know, especially with women, sometimes we meet a friend that feels like a sister, you know, and we just, we talk every day and that kind of thing. So sometimes, but I think that can be very heavy for people, and eventually expectations do come, mm-hmm. and problems begin. What about?
I mean, I can give. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Yeah, I want to hear.
I was going to say I could give a personal example about that. I'm pretty transparent. My business partner for 5 years was probably the closest person to me. And like you had mentioned a little back, you know, you have this soul connection. I met her, and I had a soul connection. She actually was my boss in the first setting, and I had this soul connection with her. And it was beautiful, and we ended up starting a business together, and I loved showing up at the office every day with her, and she really got me, and I really got her, and aside from working, we showed up for each other personally, and it was just the most wonderful relationship. But at a certain point in our life, we grew apart, and unfortunately, when you get that close to someone, growing apart can also be painful too, but not everyone is supposed to be that close forever. You know, people have different roles for different times in our life, and I love her dearly now, but she's not in my world in the same capacity that she was.
Okay, that's a great example. Yeah, I've had, you know, my examples of friendships are all people that loved me and then turned crazy. I have a whole string of them. Stalker, a drug addict, I mean, it's a whole string of them. And it really, one of them broke my heart, the other one scared the living daylights out of me, and I moved out of state.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so that was a pretty heavy one.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that there are different, like number three of the way that you define a good friendship is, can your friend keep a secret?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I mean, go
yeah.
Ahead. No, you can.
What is that about?
I mean, I personally, and I'm sure your listeners and you, like, believe that if you have a friend, you need to trust them. You really need to have a friend that can hold a secret and hold your confidence in that, or else you can't get vulnerable in a safe way. And if your friend is the gossip queen or king, you really want to be mindful that if they're doing that with you, they're probably doing or have the capacity to do that about you at some point. So you want to look at their characteristics and really just know, like, can I trust this person with my intimate secrets? If 5 years from now we're not friends or as close, are they the type of person that will still keep my secrets personal? Just to build a sense of safety.
Mm. That's a really good one. and can we really trust anyone forever to keep our secret?
You know, I'm a therapist. I'm a psychotherapist for a reason. I do believe there is a degree that people come to me and they feel absolute safe to share with me because I'm bound by law. But I also believe there are people out there that can keep your secrets safe because they have integrity and ethics about them too, and picking to choose what to share and to whom is so important. But absolutely, I do think in good friendships we can over years still have love for that person that we're not close to and keep their secrets close to our heart.
Mm. Well, that's good news. That's good news. yeah, things change, situations change, and but you're right. If you truly love the person, you know, if that friendship is a loving one, then what you share with each other is really forever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It should be, yeah. And I think if it's mutual sharing, there should be mutual respect. You know, you wouldn't
right.
want your friend to share about you, but they've also shared and gotten vulnerable with you. So you kind of both understand that those experiences and moments should just be kept between you two.
Right, right. What about the way we bond with each other? So what would healthy bonding be?
Oh, that's a good question. I think that healthy bonding is sharing in vulnerability slowly. Like I said before, you don't want to jump in with a new friend and just kind of disclose your whole world to them, but slowly start to bond with them and figure out both the positive and negative aspects of their personality, because we all have it. And, you know, bonding usually happens over mutual shared interests. So hopefully your friend enjoys doing some of the same similar activities or hobbies or passions or even talking about some of the same things as you. So, you know, slow and steady wins the race when bonding is considered. and bonding about joyful things, not just bonding about complaining or negative things or stressful things or fear, bonding around fearful things, but bonding about, you know, what brings you passion and joy is a wonderful way to start a relationship.
So what would negative bonding look like?
A negative bonding would be like if you were to meet up with your friend and all you do is kind of talk about what's bothering you, or you might talk about a mutual person that you both don't like, or get really heavy about politics, but it's all negative. You're really joining in, like, judging others, and it's got a toxic quality.
Okay. I think, I think that some of us do that with our friends. Some of us, so if we don't have that person to sort of share our negative point of view, then, and I'm not a negative person, so I would never do that. I would always be more on the positive. But some people do have a lot of baggage that they're carrying that they do want to share. And sometimes they do bond with people, other people who have a lot of baggage that they need to share. And so that's not healthy when you do that.
So it absolutely is healthy to vent to your friend. And I am speaking of if all you do is vent or talk negatively about your stressors, you want to be mindful of that. But picking up the phone and calling your friend after a hard day at work and sharing, asking the person if they're even open to listening, sharing about your hard days is a healthy part of a friendship. However, if you're only doing that and it's only one-sided and you're not having joy together too, it just becomes a venting ground versus a really fulfilling relationship, a more well-rounded relationship.
Right. So it's a balance that we're looking for.
Yes. Yes. I have one of my girlfriends, and she's a therapist, and I had dinner with her a couple, like last week, and she's like, okay, are you sitting down? I have to download on you. And I was like, yes. And she like downloaded, she wants to move her office and she wants to do all these things. And she downloaded for a while. We hadn't talked really a lot that week. And I was like, hey, I need to download on you. And we're acknowledging that part of that dinner was like we were catching up on not necessarily negative things, but we were downloading our week together. So it's an awareness around it, so to speak.
Okay. That makes sense. I know, you know, my daughter, when she was in college, every once in a while she would call me and she would, you know, tell me all the negative things that were happening. And I would start to, you know, try to solve the problems. And she would say to me, no, Mom, I'm just dumping, you know. I don't need an answer. I just need to get it off my chest. And then she was fine. But
no, I mean, that's
like
the perfect example. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Some people just need you to not fix. They just need you to listen. I mean, sometimes it's a therapist role, too. And I think as parents, as a parent, we want to fix. And when someone's complaining, we're thinking of solutions. But really what they're looking for is just a safe place to vent.
Right.
So that's beautiful
and
that your daughter could
ask
you that.
Right. Actually, she didn't say, I just want to dump you. She would say, I want to vent. I'm just venting. That's exactly what she would say. I'm just venting,
yeah.
Mom. Which made me laugh and lightened me up because I realized, you know, we all have things that go on, and this was the place, the safe place for her to vent.
And I love that example because it's not a safe place for you to necessarily vent back because a parent-daughter relationship, while you can vent a little, is a little one-sided. And so it's not a friendship in that she should vent a lot more to you and you can listen and hold space for her, but you venting a lot to her isn't the right role because she's not your friend, right? She's your daughter. So it's a really good parallel and when we're talking about, you know, what's healthy and what's not healthy.
Good point. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We don't want to vent to our children. You know, unless there's something very serious going on that we want them to know. But
right.
We don't just need to moan, gripe and moan about our day-to-day stuff with them. So some friends bring out the worst in us as far as our behaviors, and they may influence us in negative ways. So that would not be a good friendship, right?
Yeah, I mean, you don't really necessarily want a partner in crime, and I say that lightheartedly, but if you're finding that your friendship, you are meeting up with this person and you're engaging in excessive spending or excessive drinking or just doing behaviors that you know are toxic for you, and then you found a friendship that's like okaying them, kind of co-signing them, partying, you know, drinking, those type of things, you kind of want to look at, is this really healthy, or did I just find someone who enjoys these toxic, unhealthy behaviors just as much as me, and we're kind of just engaging in those behaviors together? So it's really important to understand, like, what parts of you come out with this friend. Are they the healthiest parts? Are they mirroring your unhealthy parts? And are you engaging or connecting on that level?
Right. Right.
I'm sure that a lot of your listeners can say, oh, I have that one friend. You know, when we get together, I have a client, and she has a friend up in Connecticut who flies down quite often. And I always say to her, you know, when the client comes down, they want to go gambling and they want to drink. And my client does this, but she engages so much more in this behavior when her friend comes down. And I kind of have to check her and I say, like, what is this really about, you know? So it's good to look at what are the behaviors you're engaging in when you're in that friendship.
Right. You know, I got together with a group of friends. It was like, I think, 9 or 10 women. These were friends from middle school and high school, you know, that had stayed close, but I had not stayed close with them. And every once a year, they take a vacation. And we connected on Facebook, and they invited me to join them. And the first time I went, it was really wonderful. But I did notice that they were big on just partying. It wasn't, when they got together, it wasn't about anything real. It was just good times, good times, good times. And the second time I went with them, that really came out, and it made me very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So I did not continue to keep in touch with these people because their idea of friendship was just good times, you know, all good times and without any care in the world. And I'm a deeper person. I require a relationship with people that I'm going to spend time with. I require that, you know, I can share my perspective and my values and things like that, and the other person will share with me. And so I enjoy a deeper conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. I definitely I feel the same way you do. And I'm sure there are individuals out in the world that don't want to have as deep connections and want to kind of connect on more superficial events and activities or partying. And there's no judgment there, but my personality structure is a little bit like you, and I can find myself in those situations actually feeling lonely because no one's being vulnerable, no one's really connecting on a deeper level, and it feels very superficial for me, and for me that doesn't work. So I don't get what I need, which is connection.
Right.
So I would probably have had the same response as you did, and while people are all entitled to go and have fun and get their needs met differently, that wouldn't be something that would feel fulfilling for me either.
Well, good. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I see on Facebook, you know, the pictures of all of them together, and they're so happy. And sometimes I get just a little bit of jealousy, you know, that I can't be part of that. But it is not me. I'm empathic and very sensitive, and I do much better with a one-on-one, you know. So I guess we have to really know who we are and not try to be what everybody else is being.
Yeah, and I mean, I have, you know, like I said, there are different roles for different people, and knowing that about yourself, I am also someone who loves one-on-one relationships. And, you know, those are some of my closer core people I sit down and I can have real conversations with, and it's just very freeing. And then I am part of a book club, and it's a bunch of women, and it doesn't get as deep. And it has a beautiful space in my life for once a month. And I meet with them, and our lives are evolving, and it's cool to kind of have a cocktail with them. But it's not filling that, you know, inner circle need for me, at least not yet. But, you know, I can still engage in a little bit of that, but I also know that's not what fills me up completely.
Right. And I remember back, you know, when my children were little and everybody was doing play groups, I didn't enjoy it, you know. I preferred spending time with my child, you know, quality time with my child and doing things together, but I never enjoyed the play group. So, I guess this has just been a pattern. There's a caller. I don't know if they're calling in to listen or to comment. So let's check it and see what they want to say.
Hello.
Good morning. Hi. Are
good
you
morning,
calling
morning.
In to make a comment or ask a question?
I was just kind of listening for a minute. I just got on here, so I was just listening.
Okay.
But I do like to make comments. I just haven't got enough information yet.
Okay. All right. Well, you know what? I'm going to leave your mic live, and
okay.
You know, if you have a comment, just pop in. Okay. So, what about if we are having a beef or a gripe with the other person, and we're afraid to say something? Because we're afraid that that person is going to jump all over us or get mad or, you know, our friendship will end. Is that a good way to have a friendship, or is that a problem if we can't do that?
I mean, it's a really big problem if you can't have a conversation with a friend about how you're feeling about them. Making it about what's coming up for you, obviously, not pointing the fingers, but you have to be able to be transparent with your friend and be able to work through conflict together, or else you're just going to be tiptoeing or eggshell walking around your friend. And the best friendships are the ones that can go through conflict and actually grow closer. And if you can't speak your truth or talk about your feelings, kind of defeats the point of growing together. You're kind of just storing resentment and, you know, not being authentic in your friendship. But some people, when you talk to them and you share, hey, this has really upset me, or when you said this, it really upset me, they go right into defense mode and shame comes up for them or a lot of other feelings. And it takes a little bit of maturity to be like, oh, I didn't see that. Help me understand that. Or now that you've explained that to me, it makes sense. This is what's been going on for me, and kind of work through those issues together. But absolutely important that you can have hard conversations with your friends so you can get through them and grow closer. That's, in fact, how we grow closer.
That's true. And in that same vein, apologizing. Can we both apologize with each other?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm a big one with that because I'm such an emotional person and sometimes I make mistakes, but I'm the first one to be like, I am so sorry. I was out of line, or this was what was really going on for me, and owning my behavior because I know that I'm not perfect. And being allowed to make mistakes or show emotion or express yourself and know that your friend will own it or look at it or probably analyze it later, and you can work through it or better understand why you got to that point.
That sounds very healthy. So what do we do if we have a really good friend who asks us to keep a secret that goes against our morality, or that we know somebody we care about is being affected? What do we do in that case?
That's a really good question. I haven't thought about that, but I would love an example. But I think the most important thing is if you're holding on to a toxic secret for a friend that is bothering you, that you go to your friend and you share why holding on to that secret for them is bothering them. And if you're really struggling, like you really can't hold on to the secret, you tell your friend, you know what, like, maybe you know, I'm going to put this ball in your court, but maybe you need to disclose this secret. This isn't really something healthy for me to be holding on to. You can talk to a therapist or somebody who can help you process why the secret is affecting you so much. But you want to be transparent with your friend and tell them, like, holding on to this secret isn't healthy for me. And see if maybe they can see holding on to the secret probably isn't healthy for them.
Hmm. You know, because you hear about things where, you know, one person has an affair and the person they're having an affair with is, you know, somebody they know, and the whole thing gets tangled up and, you know, they need to tell somebody, but the friend doesn't really want to be involved. So, you know, that could be difficult.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good example in that triangulation or talking to your friend about secrets about another friend. I'm assuming that you know the person that they're having an affair with. That's a dynamic that I would not encourage. And if someone is struggling with an affair and it's within the same friend group, and they need to talk about it, they need to talk to someone who's not in that circle, mm-hmm. i.e. therapist or a family member that can hold the space and doesn't have relationships with the other people that are involved in that dynamic.
Oh, good point. I like that. Yeah, that makes really good sense, because that way the person can talk about it, they can get it off their chest, they can share it with somebody, but, you know, it doesn't impact the people who they're close to, the people in their circle, friend circle. You are a certified Imago therapist. What is that?
I love that you asked that, because not many people know that. So I'm a certified Imago therapist, which means I have, like, extra training in couples and relationship. And Imago means image. So it's being in dialogue when you're in therapy with someone, but that we bring people into our lives that hold up a mirror for our core wounds and other areas, and they're essentially mirrors or images of us to grow and learn from. I mean, you know, in a spiritual sense, we attract some of the lessons that we need to learn. And through the Imago process, which is a type of therapy that I do, and it's experiential in that you're experiencing a lot of the other person and walking through mirroring, validating, and empathizing them, but also tying it back to what they say to you that maybe affected you or hurt you actually probably ties back to an earlier wound or a bigger wound for you. So once you can start to see full picture, you can start to make sense of how you're reacting and responding in your relationship. It's a beautiful type of therapy, and I absolutely love it. So I love that you asked that, because it does bring the spiritual qualities of who we pull into our life and why to the surface.
That's
yeah. What would you do, or I'm sure, you know, as a therapist, you have had situations where you've realized that the person who's coming in and is upset is in a narcissistic relationship, and you can pick right up on that. Mm-hmm. How do you handle that?
So I'm under the philosophy, unless there's extreme abuse, everybody is in our lives for a reason. And if you're attracting someone who's really narcissistic, it can be really hard for me on one end, but I try to have the person kind of turn inward and look at what is it about that person? Where are their boundaries? Where is their self-worth need work on? What is it about that person, their trauma bonding? What are they replaying in this relationship that I can help heal on their side of the fence? So that person is bringing up wounds and bringing up lessons that we can work on internally with ourselves. And once we work on those things, chances are you're not going to stay engaged in a toxic or unhealthy relationship with the other person. And the attachment can be very strong, so it can take time. But I never, ever tell a client to leave a relationship. That's not my job. I help the client grow to a space where they see that for themselves, or they come to a conclusion of what's healthy for themselves and hopefully get some lessons out of the relationship. Sometimes really hard, painful lessons, but inevitably some really great lessons that they hopefully don't repeat in the next relationship.
Hopefully, yes. If they, you know, that's the thing. If you go through a relationship with a narcissist or something very toxic, and you don't have somebody help you work through the issues that you're carrying, you'll bring them into another relationship and often repeat the same kind of thing until you're completely broken down and you can't look away from the issue. And but I know that sometimes therapists will encourage the relationships to, you know, what is your part in this relationship? But I like the fact that you're saying you encourage the person to go within and see mm-hmm. what they need to work on, not about what they contributed or didn't contribute to the relationship, but what they're feeling and experiencing that's keeping them stuck, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Or what's keeping them attached, or what keeps triggering or wounding them that is old that we can go back and heal. Because the chances, if we can go back and heal the past a little around the wounding that's happening in the current, the wounding that happens in the everyday will lose its emotional charge. I hope that makes sense. Kind of complicated.
Oh, yes.
But.
Yes. No, it does. It does. So I know, you know, before we went on air, we talked about how we both are spiritual in our big picture view of everything. And mm-hmm. And we were talking about how, and you just kind of said it, we were talking about how some things are lessons, some things are meant to be. So what is your perspective on a spiritual level?
Yeah.
As far
so
as friendships,
I, yeah.
Yeah, as far as friendships go.
Yeah, so I think that we pull in, you know, vibrationally, we pull in lessons and we attract like sometimes, or the exact opposite. You know, we don't always know why we're pulling in the person that we're pulling in. I do really believe that people cross our paths for a reason. Sometimes they cross our paths to say, this isn't the type of friendship that I want anymore, and I'm going to, you know, exit it. And sometimes they cross our paths because we have learned and grown and we're ready for a different type of friendship. So, you know, analyzing who is in your life, how are they in your life, what joy do you have together? All those things are really important. If you've been through a lot together and you want to keep that person in your life, that's fine as long as you're checking in with yourself and it's not out of guilt or responsibility. Kind of digressing from the question that you asked me. But I do believe that if you take the approach that everybody that shows up in your life for a reason, it doesn't mean that you have to have a relationship with them, but they are showing up and presenting you with something and that you need to look at that, it puts you a little bit more in an empowered state of choosing for yourself what feels right and why.
It definitely puts you in an empowered space.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sometimes we have a hard time looking at a challenge or a hurdle that we have in life and seeing it as something that has a greater purpose. Now, if you're someone who has learned to view situations in life that way, then every time something presents itself, you know, as you and I do, we look at it and we say, okay, what is this supposed to teach me? What am I going through? You know, that's my automatic that I go to. But not everybody has that view and can get to that. So what do you tell people that are saying, well, you know, why would this be a good thing for me? What is positive about this?
It's a good point, and I haven't always had that view. Every moment when something negative is happening, I think part of the healing process is that you are in a victim state. And I say that with so much love because many
mm-hmm.
people, especially people who have been abused by a narcissistic relationship, you are, in fact, a victim in many ways. The problem is if you stay in that state indefinitely, you don't ever move or grow into kind of what we're sharing about. So being a victim isn't necessarily a bad thing. Expressing appropriate anger, learning about, you know, ghosting and, you know, devaluing and all these narcissistic things that I'm sure that you talk about and really diving in there is okay. It's that you don't want to stay there. You want to move from, wow, I feel victimized to what do I need to learn about myself and what changes do I need to make? What am I no longer willing to accept? To move into a more empowering state where you kind of move out of that to, you know, a stronger sense of self and can look back. And I think, you know, I wouldn't look at my every relationship as spiritual in the moment that I'm, you know, in so much pain about it. And I think it takes time to heal, takes time to process. And sometimes we are not even able to process fully until we're out of the relationship. So there's many levels of detaching and processing, and that when you get healed, you get to a place of indifference. You can send that person love, you can take the lessons with you, and you can move forward knowing that you're going to look out for yourself or have better boundaries or better self-love, that you won't put up with what you were able, what you were putting up with, you know, 2 years ago or 5 years ago. So it's more of an evolution and less of a set mindset. Does that make sense?
Oh, my gosh, yes. And thank you for using the word victim, because I completely agree with you. I agree with everything that you said. And when we allow people to understand, when we say you were a victim, doesn't mean you have to take a victim mentality, but you were a victim. Not many therapists will allow that. So I'm really happy to hear you say that. When you said the word victim, I'm like, oh, thank you. Because,
yeah,
yes,
absolutely.
It is a victimization situation. Narcissists target us, keep us hostage. We are victims. But I like the way you put it. I totally, totally understand what you said. You have a trademark, Selfful,
yeah.
SELF-FULL. What is Selfful?
So Selfful is a word that I came up with because I work a lot with codependency, codependent women, people who are love-seeking, and I work on helping them develop a healthier sense of self, internal love, internal connection. And they'd come into my office, not all women, men too, and I kept saying, you've got to learn how to be selfish in a healthy way. And the word selfish in itself has such negative feelings attached to it, and actually is negative. Selfish means you only care about yourself. You lack empathy. Essentially, you have narcissistic traits. So they started looking at me like I had 12 heads and it didn't work. So I said, start thinking about yourself as being selfful. So they typically become selfless in their relationship, meaning they're the givers and they overextend themselves and they lose their sense of identity and almost have some self-abandonment qualities when they pair up with someone who is selfish. So my work is really to help the people who tend to give themselves away too much to move to a fuller state. And what that just means is that you're starting to, you still have empathy, you're still sensitive, you're still very mindful, but you prioritize your needs a little bit differently. So you fill yourself up more from within. Your internal world is stronger and more connected than your external world. People who are selfless tend to react to the external world a lot and be constant givers. So I'm not trying to make them more selfish. I'm trying to make them more self-full, which is a very intentional space of taking care of what's going on inside of themselves first and then responding to the external world.
Mm. I love it. That's a great, great. So there's a method. You have the self-full method, and that's just something that you use. Your therapist.
Yeah,
it's a therapeutic path to personal wellness. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So first, you know, it was the concept, and then actually do apply it to people who are attracted to more narcissistic type of people, the selfish people. And I find that the more selfless you are, the more desperate you can be for love or more willing to give or have a lot of empathy. And some of these qualities are beautiful qualities that we should all have. But your likelihood to attract a taker is actually higher. So if I can move that person to a healthier place of prioritizing their own needs, understanding what self-care is, that it's not having guilt around it or a sense of responsibility, being less of a caretaker and more caretaking to their inner child, voice, they are less likely to attract someone or put up with someone who's more on the selfish end of the spectrum. So I move that population, I try to empower that population and shift their inner world so that they attract something a little bit healthy in their outer world and their relationships.
I really like the way you put that. That is the way to do this. You know, and I use a very similar method, but I don't have a name for it. But it is. And I find that especially those who have been narcissistically abused in childhood and then get into a chain of narcissistic relationships, that concept is so, I mean, they just can't get it. They can't wrap their head around it at first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we also, like, we retract that trauma again in hopes to repair it, right?
Right. Exactly.
And we're trying to repair it with this external person when the real repair is within.
Exactly.
And I think that's hard for people to really grasp their head around.
And I've had so many people come to me who in childhood they've been told, don't be selfish, you're selfish, because they had narcissistic parents who were deflecting and who were projecting their own dysfunction onto the children. So
yeah, I mean,
they were told their whole life, you're selfish, you know, that's selfish that you care about yourself. So it's hard to integrate that into our being.
Absolutely. And I think women especially, I mean, I hate to stereotype here, but we're brought up in society, and there's even some statistics and research that, like, it's our job to keep our partner happy, and that being selfless for many women was seen as a positive thing, and in our society kind of supported that. And I think we're moving more hopefully into a space where we're learning that being selfless is not positive, and that's precisely why I'm doing the work that I'm doing. But we are ingrained in a lot of ways, and being empathic and sensitive souls, we're more likely to give. And so it's such a beautiful gift, but harnessed the wrong way with the wrong messages growing up, we can get ourselves into a lot of really sticky situations.
Absolutely. So is there anything that you wanted to say as we're coming near the end that maybe I haven't asked you about?
No, I'm so grateful that you had me online today and that we share a common passion and a message, it sounds like. So I just really want to thank you for inviting me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Yeah, I love, it's been great talking to you. We do connect. Mm. We are of the same mindset. And I'm really happy to hear that you're doing this work, because I have so many clients who come to me after having had cognitive behavioral therapy that shamed and blamed them and kept them stuck in their, in their toxic situation, in their toxic state of mind, in their confusion, made them feel guilty for trying to have a self. So it's really nice. It's very refreshing to hear you as a licensed therapist have that mindset. And that is something that you didn't learn. You developed it, right?
I would say that I learned it personally and studied it fanatically, that it's a little bit of both. I wouldn't be completely transparent if I wasn't sharing that at one point. I was more of a selfless giver, and I still am. I'm a therapist, but learning to be healthy and in the middle has been one of my life lessons, and I've also done a tremendous amount of studying and continuing education around relationship dynamics and energy and attachment theory.
Right, and speaking for my listeners who are mostly narcissistic abuse sufferers, we thank you for that additional work and that, you know, that open mind. So it's because, you know, sometimes I feel very alone in what I do here, and it's nice to know that someone else is doing it and not too far from me.
Yeah, not too far, and I have a closed group that you're welcome to join, or I can join. I go live once in a while for free, and I speak to this population. And there's only one of me, so sometimes I try to go as live as much as I can, but I try to talk about trauma bonding and other topics that, you know, maybe someone who isn't getting coaching or psychotherapy still needs to be educated around why they keep repeating the same patterns or what's showing up for them. So I created a closed group for women only. That I wanted, someone commented today, just help women. I just felt it was important to separate women from men in this topic because I've been in other groups and I've seen the dynamic. If I had a lot of time, I would do a closed group for men too, but right now I'm really kind of focusing on women. So I'd love if you wanted to one day go live with me or we could do something together. Yeah, I'm the Relationship Institute of Palm Beach, and the group is Overcoming Toxic Bonds and Narcissistic Attachments. So as long as we plan it far enough out, we can get online and maybe support some of this population together. I would love that.
I would love that, too. So I have your phone number on my queue here, and I'll just write that down. Okay. And do you have a website that my listeners can go to?
Sure. It's www.relationshipspb.com. So it's www.relationshipspb.com. And my Facebook page is the Relationship Institute of Palm Beach. And then I have an Instagram account. It's Jessica Baum, LMHC. And you can basically find me on any of those, a little bit more about my background, and stay connected.
Okay. That's great. Okay, I'm sure that my listeners will take you up on that. Check that out. So I will be in touch with you. Again, thank you so much. It's been really fun, really wonderful. And I've enjoyed the conversation, you know, because you and I like this one-on-one, so we're doing it right now.
Absolutely.
We spent an hour doing it. Okay.
Thank you for having
me. Beautiful, you're very welcome. Enjoy this beautiful day.
Okay, you too, Randy.
Thank you. So we are out of time, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randyfine.com. On Friday, it is Free Advice Friday, the second Friday of the month when I take your calls and answer your questions. Actually, is it Free Advice Friday this week? No, I'm not so sure. Let me take a look. No, that will be next week on the 13th. The 13th will be Free Advice Friday. Where I take your calls and answer your questions about your narcissistic abuse. The number to call in will be 424-220-1801. Feel free to call in and ask me whatever you want or comment on what I am talking about or what others are talking about. So that'll be 11 a.m. Eastern on Friday the 13th. Wow, that's heavy. Okay. Anyway, may joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed today's show. Visit randyfine.com, RANDIFINE.com, and be sure to sign up to receive updates on the latest blog posts, events, and upcoming shows. Thank you for listening.